Today's podcast, after just getting one 24 hours ago, we've got Ted Wynn from The Athletic. Incredible NFL film breakdown stuff, trends, what he sees with elite defenses, offenses, a couple other stories as well. A subdued and focused Lane Kiffin during Auburn week. We'll talk about his Ole Miss program, his career, and some of the coaching lessons along the way. We've got life advice and our picks where Cerruti should be 5-0. It's the Ryan Russillo podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 and older and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side-by-side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
Thinking about something that I always think about, that's okay, who the top five are. And the top five isn't really fair. I think it's kind of the top seven, top eight. Some years it could be eight. Some years maybe it can be six. And that list is probably even shorter when we think about the guys that truly show up to your team and now you're a completely different team. Like you're actually a title contender. And again, nobody does it by themselves. And I've said these things before, but that's why I think every year with the draft, when you're like, okay, well, what can this guy be? Can he be a one on a good basketball team? And I'm not saying LeBron, the number one on a team that's a perennial contender for a decade, which is what you get when you got LeBron. It's just somebody who can change the course of your franchise. And if we have 60 draft picks every year and 14 lottery, to suggest that we get two of those every year in the draft isn't really the case. Although this exercise, it was a little bit more, I don't know if the exercise, the way I did it, was more forgiving, or maybe there's a little bit more depth there to the question that I'm going to ask. And that is very simple, because here's the parallel. If you look at NFL quarterbacks going back in the last couple of years, it was very clear there's going to be a changing of the guard. All right, Breeze was on his way out. There's some years there where like the numbers are pretty good. And then it took me a little while to go, you know what? It's actually, he kind of limits what you can do as an offense, despite a Hall of Fame career. Roethlisberger, we saw the decline. And at the very end, it was brutal. Couldn't see it anymore. We thought Brady was going to move on. So there was a group of 3 to 4. You could put Rivers in there. I think Ryan was always in kind of that 7 to 12 range, certainly not in that top five range at any point, despite an MVP season. I just feel like it was clear there was going to be a changing of the guard, and that's now Mahomes, it's Allen, it's Herbert, who everybody loves from a physical standpoint. I thought Lamar's first month was incredible this year. You know, last game wasn't great. Who cares? Not a big deal. But the names that we were used to for almost a decade, it was going to start changing out and changing out rapidly. And when I look at the top 7 to 8 NBA players currently, and I'm going to give you those, knowing that going into the season, this is probably going to change. But I don't like changing these. Like power rankings for players, it's not really what I'm interested in doing every single week. I think it takes a while for me to think you deserve to be considered that. And then I also think it takes a little while for you to be removed from it. And it's not necessarily just one bad season or one bad injury season. Now, multiple injury seasons is a different story. So if I look at it in no particular order, I'd go Giannis, Durant, Luka, Jokic, Embiid, Steph. And I still feel like it's worth putting LeBron 7th. That may be a reach at this point. We'll see what this season's going to look like as he turns 38. The stats are still incredible. He knows how to impact a game at an age that it usually just doesn't happen. You look at the rest of his draft class, like the fact that Melo's even kind of hanging on, hoping for an invite somewhere is pretty amazing, but the rest of the guys are all done. and we're talking about LeBron, and that's, again, a credit to how special he is as a player, but that feels like the right group. If we were doing tiers, and that's why I don't always love top five, because it's like, well, what if I think five, six, and seven are all kind of the same? I don't really want to have to decide as if one isn't worthy of being in that group. Giannis, still a lock moving forward. Luka, lock moving forward. Jokic, I think Embiid, the same deal. But KD, 34, another injury season. LeBron, we're getting near the end. Steph, I think, is always going to be really valuable just because the shooting is going to hold up. I just wonder if 2-3 years from now. So kind of the exercise is, all right, of the players that we're talking about now, how many names can we come up with in a list that could be potential replacements 2-3 years from now as like that new group of the tier ones, the top 7 or 8 players? And other players that have been on here, like Kawhi's out of this group, just too many injuries at this point, despite at one point me even wondering if he was the best single player in the NBA. Harden, statistically, was always kind of in that top five group. Didn't feel that he was a top five guy necessarily, but still worth talking about, like in the conversation. He's bumped out of that. If you look at ESPN.com, they actually moved Durant to 8th behind Tatum 7th. Maybe. I'm not sure if I feel that. The rest of .com is Ja 9th and Devin Booker was 10th. So that's just to kind of round out some of the other thoughts and some of the other names. So what I did is I went through all the drafts from 21 all the way down to 12 to kind of give you perspective of who could be up next, come up with the who's next list, but then whittle that down and kind of, well, let's come up with a defining line of where, okay, now we're going too far with it. Cade, it's too early. I actually think Anthony Edwards has a chance to be one of these guys. And that is pretty rare of me to go, yep, 2 years in, I think he could be this special, which also means you better start winning like 55 games. You need to be the number one. You know, it's not always going to be 55 games. You get the point. Like what Luka did, even if I don't think of the Mavs as a perennial Western Conference Finals team, which has more to do with, well, it's a combination of things. It's the Mavs roster, and it's also how tough the West is going to be, although that can change. You know, we'll see what happens here as we move forward. But that Luka had a run in his third year after putting up absurd playoff numbers in the first place, those couple series against the Clippers to get things started. So he's had his kind of coming out playoff run, beating a Phoenix team that was incredible in the regular season. I don't really think they had much of a chance against Golden State, but you know, Luka has had that breakout moment, at least, where you're like, okay, this guy actually could carry a team this far by himself. Because the rest, you know, when you think about his number twos and some of the other guys' number twos, but a lot of that has to do also on the style of play that the Mavs have to have with a guy like Luka. So Edwards, I would put on the potential list. Keep track of this. Zion and Ja are real candidates. I mean, hell, like I said, Ja's 9th already on ESPN.com. So if in 2 years, I mean, just to remind you what Ja did this past season, 27 points, 6 boards, 7 assists, 49 and 34% from 3. Those are his shooting splits. He shot 40% for 3 after the All-Star break. He had 47 in game 2 against Golden State, where you're like, okay, this is real. So I do think Ja belongs on the list. I think Zion probably checks a lot of different boxes on what we would expect one of the breakout player, the tier one players to be in the NBA. He's got to be healthier first, but to be on the potential list, no problem. Luka's already there. I don't think Trey would ever be that guy. That's probably not super surprising to a lot of you who listen to me on these podcasts for years. He's really good, and he's very productive. I don't think he's ever going to be somebody you're like, he's one of the 7 best players in the NBA. And again, that's not an insult. It's kind of back to like the Lamar stuff with the QB tiers that we did with Sandow. If people freak out about the Lamar thing, you're like, all right, so the NFL thinks he's like the 6th or 7th quarterback, best quarterback in the league with some really good ones ahead of him. All right, that's not really that insulting. To say Trey's not one of the 7 best players, or I don't think he will be in 2 years, that's not really that insulting. Okay, next list, Tatum and Mitchell. That Tatum's even being discussed as one of them, and as we saw with ESPN.com, they've already put him there. NBA Finals, some Western Conference Finals where I actually didn't think the teams were all that great. And if they had gotten out of Eastern Conference Finals, had they gotten out of the East, I would have thought it was kind of surprising. He's certainly on the list, if not already there. Donovan Mitchell, I think, is still a potential guy, but probably not. Probably not. Like, as his career has arced and it's coming off a little bit more disappointment than some of the stuff we've seen before, it still would feel like a reach to go Donovan Mitchell is going to be the 7th best player in the NBA in 2024. So I'll put him down on the list. Don't feel it. Lauri Markkanen. Seen it argued somewhere. We're going to go ahead and cross that one off. Brandon Ingram. Nice player. Big step up. Nice playoff numbers. I don't see it. Pascal Siakam, what I just said about Ingram. You could say, well, you know, he's got the ring and everything. Yeah, sort of. Jamal Murray, nice player. Don't see it. Ben Simmons, really expensive role player. That's a no. Booker Towns from the 15 class. Booker, as we saw on .com, is 10th. When they made their finals run 2 years ago, people were really flirting with the idea of how much they wanted to talk about Booker. When I look at Towns, to me, it's an emphatic no. The numbers are awesome. The shooting for a guy that big, historic kind of stuff. He's won 3 playoff games in his entire career, and he's about to be 27 in November. And I do think the Timberwolves are going to be good. But Towns is the 7th best player. Never going to see that. Although, to be fair, when I bring up that he's only won 3 playoff games in his career, Booker had won 0 before Chris Paul showed up. But Booker feels like a better bet to be on this list, potentially, because he's already kind of right there. So I'm going to go ahead and put him down. I'm not going to put Towns down. Jokic is there. Embiid is there. You know, Embiid's 24th in games played in his class, in his draft class. Again, we know that he sat the first 2 years, barely played in third. Giannis is already at the top of the list. And then in 12, you had 2 players from that draft class that actually have been in this group. Certainly Anthony Davis, that first Pelicans-Portland series where you're like, wait, is this guy a top 5 player? The bubble title, that guy was a top 5 player in the NBA. It feels weird that I'm putting somebody that's already been in that group back on the list potentially because I'm not writing him off. Although it just feels like a worse and worse bet. Lillard probably is in that Booker range with the best, the height of his deal, like some of those, the playoff shot against Oklahoma City and how we rush to go, wait, is Lillard, you know, Lillard's sitting there being like, I don't get any love. And like, how come people don't think he's a better point guard? It's because the rest of the point guards in the West are fucking awesome. So yeah, back to the Lamar thing, back to, you know, when we talked about Trae Young just moments ago, when Lillard was the 3rd best point guard in the West, that actually wasn't some massive insult. It can be packaged as disrespect. We can pretend that. We can go on TV shows and say, oh, how come we're not talking about Lillard a little more? Well, we're talking about Lillard the perfect amount in relation to the other players that are actually better than him. But I did feel like Lillard in the Houston series, the OKC series, like so just some of the shit that he was doing during peak Lillard years, he was probably floating in that Booker range that Booker has been in the last couple of years. Okay, so I also need to point this out. Sometimes we can't see what we can't see. We have 2 of the best developmental stories we've ever seen in NBA history, and it happened kind of at the same time. Giannis becoming this, who, if you first watched it, it was exciting. It was almost a tease, though, at times. There were good video clips, but you weren't ever sure, like, is Giannis actually going to figure this thing out? And I think the first signs of it were in his 3rd year, but it wasn't really until his 4th year you're like, holy shit, like this guy's going to be awesome. He is one of the great developmental stories in NBA history. Maybe the greatest because it feels like he's the best player in the world. And that's not usually where we get our best players in the world from. Usually it's pretty clear. Usually it's like, no, that's going to be a guy. Kobe was a little different because we weren't accustomed or we didn't have any wings that were coming out of high school. So that was a little different, at least his model coming in. And we still were a little anti-high school in the 90s and all that shit that was going on. But for Giannis to become who he's been, I don't know that we saw that. Hell, when the Bucks drafted him, they didn't expect this. They've admitted that. And the other developmental story that's incredible is Kawhi, because it wasn't really until his 5th year. We're talking about a role player coming in to kind of give you a defensive matchup and maybe hit a shot or two. Paul George would be the 3rd one. But Paul George is interesting because at one point he was on this list. During those Pacers runs, Paul George was like, wait, is this guy actually with the two-way and the shooting and the handle and the size? Like, is he the 2nd best player behind LeBron in the East? Is he the 2nd best player in the league? Again, you can act like that's crazy. As somebody who did the radio show every single day, we'd at least toss these things around, even if the answer wasn't yes. But the point that we were even talking about it was the actual point. George is not on that list anymore. So there very well could be a player right now that's sitting in front of all of us. And I try to do it. It's just so hard. Like, who's that player that's not scoring a ton that was drafted a little bit later than other guys that you go, hey, you know what? That guy could be the best player in an NBA title team and one of the clear 6 to 7 best players in the NBA. That's a hard thing to figure out. And maybe I'm not good enough knowing who that is right now, but that's kind of the point, is I don't think many people would be. So if we look at Giannis, who's staying, Luka, who's staying, Jokic, who's staying, Embiid is staying, that's four. KD, I still think is going to be really good for a couple of years. But if we're talking about in 2024, Steph probably starts to slow down at that point. LeBron, I would imagine, heading into a 40-year-old season. How many people can replace the three? Edwards, Zion, Ja. I mean, Ja's right there right now. Tatum, right there right now. I'm going to say no to Mitchell. I'm going to say no to Ingram, no to Siakam, no to Murray. We'll put Booker down. No to Towns. Jokic and Embiid, as we already admitted. I don't think AD gets back into there. So I guess that's the list. Edwards, Zion, Ja, Tatum, Booker. And I'm definitely missing a couple people because we'll all be surprised. Now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Join today to get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. That's free bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with the promo code Ryan, R-Y-E-N. Our picks will be right before life advice for this weekend. FanDuel has all of your favorite bets, from the money line, 2-point spreads, to player props. You can combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same game parlay. With live betting, you'll get updated odds on games that have already started. Get paid your winnings fast, all on an app that's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Don't fumble your chance to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, with the promo code Ryan, R-Y-E-N. Make every moment more this season with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 and older in select states. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable free bets that expires in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Ted Wynn joins us from The Athletic. He's one of my favorite NFL follows. The breakdowns are just another level. So thanks for joining us today, man. What's going on?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. I know you've talked about San Francisco and their chances of being an elite defense. I know you hinted at the idea that perhaps Dallas could have an elite defensive unit. How many units do we know, right? Well, not know, or do you think possibly are elite units, both offense and defense, in the NFL today?
Yeah, this is a pretty interesting question after, you know, looking at these teams and seeing who truly is elite. I think this year, you know, when you look at scoring has been down around the league. And it's one of the first time that defenses have been trending up, because, you know, the rules are so geared towards offenses that, and we've seen so much, you know, all these offensive records getting broken year after year. But when you look at it this year, you know, defenses are starting to catch up to offenses, and when I, you know, really looked at who was that elite, I think there are five elite defensive units, and I think there's only three offensive units that I thought were really elite. So as far as defensive units, I think the Niners are elite. I think they could be a historically good defense if they keep up. Obviously, the Emmanuel Mosley injury to who is a really good corner is going to hurt. I think Dallas has an elite unit. Buffalo has an elite unit. Tampa Bay has an elite unit, and the Eagles have a really good defense.
And okay.
As far as you want to talk defenses first?
Yeah, let's actually just stay on defenses, because you mentioned, okay, scoring's down a little bit, and I know I've asked you this before, but is there anything you're noticing in the film study, trends, you know, whether it's personnel, and I know on offense I'm going to ask you this as well, but defensive stuff where, hey, you know, I know we all keep a million defensive backs in the field now because you just have to. But have you noticed any part of this where the numbers would back up some visuals here of how the defense is catching up a little bit?
Yeah, I think there are about eight teams right now, and there's more teams that are influenced by Vic Fangio's defensive style. And, you know, it's funny because Vic Fangio is not even coaching this year because he got fired from the Broncos and he decided to take a year off. But there, you know, there's eight teams running his style of defense, which tries to get two deep safeties to limit explosive plays. And they just try to keep everything looking the same right before the snap. And after they snap, they shift defenses. It makes it a little hard on quarterbacks. They play with light boxes. And basically the premise is just to stop explosive plays, make offenses drive, make them call more plays. And the theory is that as they call more plays, there are a greater chance of something going wrong, turnover, negative play that ends the drive, and just forcing offenses to play perfect and to play really good, consistent ball has really limited them and brought scoring down.
Okay, that was a great answer. All right, so we've got five defensive units you think are a lead or could be throughout the season. You only have three on offense. Who are they?
Right now, I think the Chiefs have an elite offense, the Bills have an elite offense, and the Eagles have an elite offense. All three have really good offensive lines. Obviously, the Chiefs and Bills have two of the best quarterbacks in the league with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. But you know, the Eagles have Jalen Hurts, who is playing very well right now. I think it's he still needs to be tested in the playoffs, and we'll see if a team could make him into a passer. Right now, that running game, that option running game, is working really well, and he has improved as a passer. But how much he has improved as a passer, and if he can play at a high level in the playoffs is to be determined. And there are about three other teams that are kind of bordering on elite right now. The Seattle Seahawks with Geno Smith, which is surprising. He's playing extremely well. They have a pretty good roster around him too. The Ravens with Lamar Jackson, but there's some question marks at wide receiver there. And the Dolphins. And obviously the question, question mark there is Tua and how much of an improved quarterback is he truly?
Yeah, your Geno breakdowns on some of these throws, like that slant to the back of the end zone to his left that he beats the corner on, like what the hell is going on here? Because this is some pretty impressive stuff. And I, again, like a lot of people didn't expect it from Geno Smith.
Yeah, I think Geno has always been a really strong thrower of the ball. And obviously we didn't see a full sample size of it in New York because a bunch of things happened. But I really think he's improved as a passer. Even last season, you saw signs of him, improving at quarterback, but he just was terrible under pressure. But this year, he's been awesome under pressure. He's been able to navigate the pocket, buy time, make plays outside the pocket. And what's really stunning is how he's able to make some of these throws off his back foot. So I don't know how long this could last, but a lot of things seem like sustainable. So it's really one of the more incredible stories in NFL this year.
Okay, on the other side, then let's just carry that into the Russell Wilson stuff. This is a stat that I saw on your Twitter feed that you responded to. With Seattle, Russell Wilson ranked top five in completion percentage over expectation in all 10 NFL seasons. No other QB came close to over this stretch. In 2022, Geno's actually leading all quarterbacks in completion percentage over expectation. All right, so that's been an unbelievable... It's an unpredictable thing that all of a sudden, okay, Wilson is this guy who's accurate all the time. Geno Smith's going to come in. People even wondered if he was going to win the job against Drew Locke. I would think so because we didn't really see a ton of him. But now on the other side, Russell Wilson can't hit anybody. I'm with you. I've seen you talk about this a little bit. I hope it's an injury because that would be something that he's too young to just now all of a sudden be physically shot. But give me the entire breakdown of like what you've seen from him through a few games.
Yeah, I think he is missing a lot of easy throws that we've seen him make. And, I don't think you just lose your accuracy out of nowhere. So I think the injury has affected him. But obviously, there's a lot of reasons for his decline of play that doesn't have to do with injury. He's getting away with a lot of bad habits. For example, that interception that he threw, the final interception that he threw against Indianapolis in that overtime game, he got away with that same pass with the Raiders, except for he actually threw a touchdown pass, even though he made the wrong read technically. So he's getting away with bad habits. I think defenses know how to defend him now. He's a sideline thrower. He likes throwing to the sidelines, and he likes throwing fades. He doesn't throw in the middle of the field. And the Seahawks kind of exposed a weakness too. They just had specific pass rush plans to force him to the left. And when he's running to the left, he's a lot more inaccurate. So teams kind of know his weaknesses now. And they're just catching up to him. And I think he thought he was going to get an upgrade in talent when he went to the Broncos, but the talent there is actually downgraded. He doesn't have DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. I think Sutton's a good receiver, but he's not on that level. with Lockett or Metcalf. So, and there are some injuries in that, you know.
Wait, so you don't think
as well?
You don't think Sutton and Judy and KJ are like at best even with them? You think no. Lockett and Metcalf are that much better than the front?
Yeah, I mean, I think Metcalf is could be a little inconsistent at times, but his ceiling is elite. And I don't think the Broncos have a guy with a ceiling that DK Metcalf have.
That's fine. And, yeah. But you think Lockett's that much better than Judy still?
I think Lockett's a really underrated receiver.
I agree with that. But yeah. I just have a hard time. Like, I just don't think it's that much of a drop-off, especially when you throw in the slot guy. But go ahead.
I think Judy hasn't lived up to his first-round billing. You know, I think we see flashes of it.
Sure.
But he's not consistent. And Lockett is the definition of a consistent guy. I think the Broncos have a little more receiving depth than the Seahawks. But when you're talking about blue chip, I mean, when, you know, the ceiling of that receiving corp, I think the Seahawks are better.
Okay. Let's talk about the Giants. You do an extensive breakdown on them this week as well. What is it? What's going on? How are they 4-1?
Brian Daboll and Mike Kafka, their offensive coordinator, have done a really good job of adjusting what they know and just featuring Saquon Barkley. You know, and I think with the Bills and with the Chiefs, those guys had offenses that were high volume passing, obviously, because they had the quarterbacks to do it. They had Mahomes and Josh Allen, and they were, you know, a spread it out, air it out team. So when they got to the Giants, you know, I think you kind of expect to see the type of offense, but they've been opposite. They've run a lot of 2-3 tight end sets. They're running the ball at a high rate, and it makes sense because they're trying to feature their best player, and they're trying to feature Saquon Barkley. I think that's just a really good sign for the future because they know how to adjust. They're not married to a system. I think we've seen coaches in the past go into teams and try to implement their system no matter what, and we've seen it not work. But here, you know, you have two guys that completely threw away what they knew before and are just trying to create a system to feature the talent on the team. And right now they're 12th in offensive DVOA. And when you look at the roster, it does not look like a team that's even close to top 10. They're 4th in explosive run rate. And Daniel Jones hasn't turned the ball over. Saquon Barkley looks like a much better, more patient inside runner. They're 2nd in play action pass rate. And Daniel Jones is 4th in EPA per pass on those type of plays. You know, I don't know if they're going to keep winning at the rate they are now, but I think it's a really good sign to see that you have a coaching staff that knows how to adjust to the talent on the roster.
And for those wondering, you know, on that 12th offense in DVOA, that's adjusted for schedule as well. Because, you know, prior to the Packers game, I'm like, I don't want to hear about this. Here's the other thing on EPA, the expected points added. I feel like almost every quarterback, you can find some version of something that they do where you'll look and be like, man, that guy's top 5 in EPA. I don't know if that plays out. Maybe the worst, like the bottom 3 guys wouldn't have something, but I feel like most quarterbacks, you can find some category where it looks like on certain types of plays, especially 5 weeks into the season. Because the rest of the Daniel Jones stuff, like I'll go with the Dable stuff, clearly Barkley. The O-line's better than we thought it would be. The receivers are not good, slash disappointing. Maybe the defense is good, you know, all of these things. I guess I'm just having a hard time that it's a completely different Daniel Jones. Like Geno Smith, I'm seeing different things. Daniel Jones, I think they're just winning some games here. And I think there's other statistical categories with Jones that they're pretty alarming still.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm not bought in Daniel Jones yet. But they've created an environment where he hasn't been a disaster. And the only reason why I brought up that 4th in EPA because they found something where, you know, they could have Daniel Jones do really well, which is play action because, you know, you draw up those linebackers, you create easy opportunities for him, and you create opportunities where he can run because, you know, you get him out on the edge on those bootlegs and he's athletic enough to gash the defense when they don't have him contained.
Right. I think you had one clip where you showed like a 3 tight end personnel set and it was basically all set up to sell Barkley. And it's like, it's not only a play action, it's look at our formation, look at the personnel. And Jones was athletic enough on that rollout. Like he basically had, I think, a 1 route pattern. You know, it's only like 1 route. There was one guy that was even going out and Jones is athletic enough to get away from it, buy himself some time, and get the angle on the throw. So athletically, I'm with you. Let's go back to Barkley real quick, though, because I think it would surprise people, because you look at Barkley coming out of Penn State, all the speed, the strength, the body, all this stuff. He gets drafted high, which again, you know, whatever with running backs, he gets hurt, he's off the radar. But physically, he looks right. But you're telling us he's a different runner in his decision making, which, you know, maybe is the biggest difference on, you know, on top of just getting that knee healthy again, because he probably got away with whatever he wanted to when he was in college.
Yeah, in college, the one knock on him was his vision. He would try to bounce plays out too early. And you saw that in the NFL too, where, you know, he was getting explosive runs, but at the same time, he had a lot of negative runs or no gains because he would try to go outside too quickly. But when you watch him this year, he's super patient inside the tackles. He's looking for that cutback inside. NFL Next Gen Stats has a way of ranking or rating guys as inside runners, and he's a top guy right now. So I think that's a credit to Daboll and Kafka's coaching as well. They are helping him improve in that area.
Is there anything that you've seen now trend-wise with offenses? You mentioned the Fangio defense and how they're trying to disguise it right up until the snap, the two deep safety look. Anything that you're seeing on offense, more balance, you know, or are teams looking at those light boxes and trying to counter that by saying, okay, you know, maybe we run this a little bit more here. And again, it always feels like a running play is a wasted opportunity for pass, which, you know, I've kind of believed before we pushed it this far. But anything that you're seeing right now?
Yeah, you know, I think with this Fangio type of defense permeating throughout the league, we're seeing teams that can rush the ball, especially teams that can run gap schemes, which is more north and south than the zone running schemes that are kind of popularized around the league. Those teams can move the ball. And, you know, when you look at the Detroit Lions and the Cleveland Browns, they don't have great quarterbacks, but because they could run the ball so well and because they could run the ball right at you, you know, they're explosive offenses. So I think we're starting to see the league trend in the opposite direction now. I think we're going to start seeing more teams try to run these gap scheme runs. We're going to see more teams look for offensive linemen that can block these gap scheme runs because these defenses are playing with such light bodies. They're playing with light boxes. And they're playing a little more passively. They're not getting upfield, so they kind of leave themselves exposed to gap scheme runs. And I don't know if it's going to trend too far in that direction because, like you said, passing is always going to be more efficient than running and more explosive than running. But we're seeing these teams that could run have really efficient offenses with quarterbacks that aren't really top tier.
There was something else that I saw going around, and you can tee it up better than I can because you're the one that brought it up, but it was basically a versatility ranking of all 32 teams with the running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends, and then cross-referencing that with like EPA numbers. And there's some groups that are really versatile and super disappointing and some other groups that aren't and are still somewhat rewarding. I think we'd all want versatility, but can you tell us a little bit more of what this chart meant? Because I know you tweeted it out and it was with somebody who works in the NFL would have good data.
Yeah, so I got that. I retweeted Andrew Patton, who worked for NFL, and basically put up a chart that ranks teams by how versatile their offensive skill players are. And then next to it, he had an offensive EPA per play, which shows how efficient they are. And obviously, the Rams, we know Sean McVay likes moving his guys around, and you know, he has a wide receiver playing fullback right now. Ben Skowronek. So, you know, he's kind of taking advantage of the versatility, or he's trying to take advantage of the versatility on his roster. But, you know, obviously the Rams have a lot of offensive line problems. The Chiefs are ranked number two. We know how Andy Reid gets creative with moving his guys around. Surprisingly, the Seahawks are high up on that list. So, yeah, you know, I think in an NFL, you just try to find any advantage you can. And finding guys that can play multiple spots is an advantage. And we're seeing a lot of guys get creative with moving wide receivers into the backfield, creating mismatches like that. So I think that's basically what the chart was trying to show.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Like, who's the most versatile? Top five: Rams, Chiefs, Seahawks, Vikings, Dallas, Cleveland's versatile. Washington, actually the seventh most versatile group among their skill guys. And then at the bottom, it's Houston, Carolina, Denver, Pittsburgh, New Orleans. All right. Final thing here that I have for you. Would you have anything on one-dimensional quarterbacks? You know, like the Kirk Cousins thing is always like the classic, hey, if it's not play action, he's not beating you. You know, I hear it brought up. I don't know if it's entirely true. He always seems to put up good numbers, so something's clearly working, even though if I don't really, I wouldn't want my team have Kirk Cousins if I wanted to win a Super Bowl. All right, very simple. Is there something that you see with a group where you go, okay, this guy puts up numbers, but he is a little one-dimensional, and against this kind of matchup, it isn't that great for him?
I think it has to do with the quarterback, and it has to do with the type of offensive system they're in, too. I mean, yeah, when you look at a guy like Russell Wilson, who we talked about, he has some glaring weaknesses. Like he throws inaccurately to the left, and he doesn't throw in the middle of the field, and that's been his MO since the beginning of his career. So teams kind of know how to defend him now. When you look at Jared,
why did Goff, it take a real quick on the Russell? Because you've said it's why did it take 10 years?
I don't think it took that long, but I think in his, when he was healthier and when he's with the Seahawks, he was athletic enough to create plays regardless of teams knowing how to defend him. So he could escape, and you know, he was so accurate. His arm talent was so good that he was able to fit passes into you know, sideline where a lot of quarterbacks couldn't, which is why his CPOE was so high. But now you're seeing some of his athleticism decline. He's not able to do some of those things. Back to your question, you know, I think when you look at Jared Goff, when he was with the Rams, he was putting up huge numbers, and all of a sudden, you get to the Super Bowl and Bill Belichick figures out a plan to stop him, and the teams that start copying that game plan, taking away those explosive play action passes, making him into a quick game quarterback, which is his weakness. He wasn't great at quick game. That really kind of stifled him. So just figuring out where quarterback is weak and making him into that type of passer, I think there is something to say about that.
Ted, awesome stuff. I can't tell you how much I appreciate all the work you put into it. You make it easier for guys like us that aren't breaking down the film all the time. So make sure you go out there and follow our guy at football. So it's at FB_film analysis. That's Ted Wynn. Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's, the perfect sandwich. Let me think. Buffalo chicken sandwiches done right can change your life. I've never been the same in the best way possible when I experienced my first one. Also loving to travel, I've had gyros, also known as gyros. I think if you go to Arby's and you order a gyro, they're not going to judge you. And that's what I like about them. Nice chicken, perfectly sauced, butter lettuce, good body. You know what I'm talking about. And that's what Arby's has. They have more than you may even realize. Get out there and explore. Well, now is the chance to try Arby's and find your favorite sandwich. With a wide range of options, see for yourself that Arby's sells more than roast beef. Plus, for a limited time, Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April online only. Simply join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. Order on the app or Arby's.com. Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss coach, joins us here. Okay, so this team is up there in the rankings. You know, Jackson, who I love, I want to talk about him at some point at quarterback. Like, what do you know about your team right now as you're about halfway through?
Yeah, we could be really good. You know, a lot of times you have teams, maybe you're winning, but, you know, you have, you know, glaring weaknesses that you're going to have to play around. You know, your defense isn't good that year, or your offense isn't, or rushing or passing. And so this team has really showed to be, you know, really elite at times in all areas. We just haven't been consistent. So we played great defense. We played great offense in the ball and out through the ball last week. So that's a really good thing. And I do hope and have thought all along that this team could improve. I know every coach says that, but more than normal, because so many players are late, you know, late portal guys, and so many key players, you know, have never been here. Kind of compared it, you know, to free agency in basketball. When you put a team together, a lot of times that team gels midway to end of the season, playoffs a lot more than they do, you know, at the beginning of the year, just because they haven't played together. And I'm hoping that's the case here.
Why do you think you're better with the transfer portal than other programs?
I'm not sure of that. I mean, I do know we attacked it very aggressively, and you know, just like I said from the beginning of the role, you know, treat it like free agency, and you know, the ability to build your team, and you know, kind of instant gratification. You know, like, okay, hey, here's players. You see them; they can be impact players right away, which a lot of times is not the case with the high school kids, especially if you're not getting, you know, the five-star, top 100 player type kids. So, and I think our guys did a good job of evaluating too, you know, to make sure that guys were good players, good fits, and we did a lot of research about who they were, not just, you know, what was on film.
Is it different when you're going after somebody in high school and you're going after somebody who, like, has already gone through that entire process and then feels like they're 10 years older just because they've gone through it, they went to a school and realized, I need to go somewhere else?
Yeah, and they think differently the second time around, especially if they only have 1 or 2 years left. So, you know, and complete openness, that's to our favor here, because to me, that next time around, it's not as important of, okay, well, I grew up being a fan of this team, or that's the biggest stadium, you know, or the best facilities. Like, they're kind of out of that. They're more, all right, which is the place that is going to, you know, fit me really well right away from a football standpoint, you know, and so I think that's favored us a lot too, you know, where a premier high school guy coming out may already in his head coming out had these three favorites he grew up always wanting to play at, you know, or, you know, was on his list, you know, was important to be in, you know, 80, 90, 100,000 seat stadiums or something. Or close to home. Second time around, they're not as worried about that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I loved watching Jackson when he played for USC, watching him out here. And then when you got him, I was like, okay. And, you know, I know it was a competition and all those kinds of things. First of all, I love his toughness. Sometimes I'm almost worried about how tough he is. What's it been like, you know, having somebody like that come in that, you know, was supposed to be the guy at SC and now has a team that's ranked here and has a coach, you know, that probably gets that position as well as anybody in the country?
Well, we kind of had a similar, you know, toughness, runner personality, like you referred to, that scares you sometimes in Matt Corral, even though Jackson's more built for it. But so we've worked through that. It's a really good thing to have. You know, it's very difficult to work the other way, you know, to not have that personality, that competitiveness, and create that. So this is much better to get them to slow down and just play smarter. So, and you don't know that for sure in practice whether they have it. So you got to get to the games. And, you know, that's been really good to see. You know, we deal all the time, all positions, but especially quarterback. Like, you don't know till you really play. You know, it's why there's so many busts in the NFL first round, let alone in college, until you really play with the guys. And obviously some guys, when you get to the game, you know, here's where they were playing, and then they go up a level. Some guys go down, and he has certainly gone up very fast from a game level where he was at in practice.
What's the best thing that you do? Like, what helps you connect? I know you know, you play the position. You have been this person that so many staffs have gone like, hey, come in and fix our offense. And now you're running these programs and your teams just always score. What is it about you that maybe makes that connection work more? Like, what have you learned about yourself in coaching that position that's given you this unbelievable resume of success?
I think that, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, we don't do well, you know, so that we work on. I think that we do a really good job of, this is the player, and not putting the player into our system at all skill positions, but especially quarterback. We build the system, we move the system around the player. And I don't think there's not any more evidence in the Alabama, because those were visual years, that, you know, obviously people saw in three different quarterbacks, completely different players, the three seasons we were there. And the offenses, when you would turn them on year to year, people would say, man, this looks like a different coordinator, you know, like a different system. So I just think the ability to see how they, their talent, to see through them, how they think, how they work, how they play, and then not just adjust to it as a system, but then in game adjust to them, where I think a lot of people kind of call plays, you know, based off of what's on the sheet, you know, not necessarily what exactly is going on mentally with the quarterback.
Yeah, that's, I don't know the position clearly as well as you guys do, but whenever I, you know, I'd be on the sidelines all the years from ESPN, and whether it was Bama, you know, a couple of Tennessee games early and now what you're doing now, I would stand next to guys that played and be like, Lane is like so good at this. And I think it's just harder for us that didn't play the position to understand what it is that makes you, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not asking, hey, how come you're so good? But there's a level of respect that I've always noticed with you at all of your stops. That's always, you know, it's something I always remember. Like, you'd set something up, you'd show something, and then the third quarter, and then the guys on the sideline that would be just from ESPN watching the game would be sitting there being like, oh man, like Lane knew and he saw all these different things. I guess it just is that rare, which isn't a question.
I've been told that. I think that you do, you know, God gives you gifts in different areas. And I think that, you know, just like playing quarterback, some have that gift. Like you say, okay, how can they think that fast? How do they see things? Or a running back, you know, has great vision and sees the guy. And then we coach another guy and he just can't see it. And so I do think that happens. Just I've been fortunate to have that on games where it just seems like it's a little bit slower than what a lot of people describe to me when, you know, they're on the headset, you know, watching the same thing.
When I think about your career, which is obviously super interesting, and, you know, the Tennessee stop, head coach at 31 in the NFL, then SC, and now everything you've done in between, I think the Tennessee one is the one that jumps out because you go, okay, you showed up and you were like, we need juice. We need energy around here. And I think in the beginning, especially in the media, we didn't understand it. We're like, what the hell is this guy doing? And it was, no, we need this energy. And when you see new programs go, well, not new programs, but there's a new opening, I'd be like, we need somebody that brings some energy, some excitement. Do you think that you've balanced that level of energy as you've gotten older, as opposed to like maybe in the beginning, that was more of a priority to you as a younger head coach, where now you're like, okay, look, my resume's out there. I don't need to do as much of that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, but I also think that every job is different. Like, I don't look at it as like, okay, this is the way we do things no matter where we're the head coach. You know, I think you have certain things about where is the program at the time. You know, like if you look at, you know, coming into Tennessee where they'd been down a few years and, you know, we had studied recruiting and stuff. I was at USC, you know, for the years. And when we first got there, Tennessee was up here on every kid's top five and stuff. And then it kind of fallen off a little bit. And Florida was rolling and Saban's at Alabama, you know, Urban. So Georgia had been beating them. And it was like, all right, we took the job, said, we've got to get attention. We've got to build confidence in our players, our fan base. So like you say, the stupid thing about we're going to beat Florida and all that stuff. Then if you look at the USC job, taking that I didn't do that. Like, now say it didn't work because I got fired, but I'm saying it wasn't like that was just me no matter what. I can just see, hey, we don't need that attention. And if you really think back of it, it wasn't this attention getting model, you know, to try to get our name out there, to get USC out there, because it was already there and had been winning for a long time. So, and then coming here, there was a little more of the Tennessee factor in it, not as aggressive, just out of maturity, but also there is a lot of that because of where Ole Miss has been, you know, over the few years before we got here and what other programs are doing in recruiting comparable. So, you know, that's why there still is some of that. And I think as you win and your program's out there and the name of the program's out there, like Ole Miss is a lot different than where it was 2.5 years ago. Now you do a little less of it.
No, that's a really good answer because it wasn't always the best question. And I thought probably some of it's just getting older, but, you know, the come to the sip, you know, juice, the dog, and those things, like they do pop up. Like, you don't want to be invisible, you know, like there's value in, oh, hey, that, oh, the come to the sip and the gear and showing the Jordans. Like, it may not mean a ton, but it also is a lot better than doing nothing, which I think everybody has realized now, where years ago, the first reaction because it's just, you know, things have sped up in a very short amount of time. The first reaction would be traditional and be like, what the hell is this guy doing?
Yeah, I mean, like, we deal in analytics, like the analytics of social media and how much attention comes and then the benefits in recruiting and what they see. I mean, we deal with it all the time. A recruit's parent comes in here into the office and the first time almost always what they say is, over the last couple of years, I follow you on Twitter. It's so awesome. I feel like I know you. Well, that's pretty important. Now it's, where's Juice? We want to see Juice. So it does work and it does connect things. And it has put Ole Miss football in the spotlight. And, you know, so that does matter.
Look, like, dog content works.
That's part of why the portal guys come and stuff. Well, that's part of it too. I mean, they certainly know, you know, the program's visual.
How do you deal with expectations for what Ole Miss can be in what has been the most loaded division in college football here for a long time?
I don't really deal with it very much because I can't control what the fans think and any of that. So we really just, sounds like today, we really just work on the day and getting guys better and seeing what we can do today and then worry about tomorrow. But I don't really worry about the expectations as much. And, you know, because, again, it sounds like my expectations are so high of what we should do. You know, like they'll be like, oh, well, here's our press release and we're at whatever, 18-3 or something, last 20 games, 21 games or something. And I'm like, well, man, we should have won that game. You know, we had a bad, horrible offensive game plan in the Sugar Bowl. Like, that's how I think.
When you talked about at the beginning of, you know, trying to identify who your team was, right? Like, you're still, you probably have an idea now, but in the beginning, okay, we get all these new pieces. You called it NBA free agency. Do you change your approach to how much love or criticism you give, or do you have your style of doing it? Like, how much do you alter based on the personalities that you're dealing with? Like, oh, I actually get to prop this team up a little bit. Oh, I actually get to kind of knock these guys down a little bit. How much do you adapt that to the roster, or do you have a pretty steady approach at every stop you've had?
No, I like, just like we talked about our offenses, I'm just always evolving, changing, and every team's different, every year is different. Shoot, every game's different. So it's just always figuring out, like, we have all these new guys, so we got to be really hard on a lot of things because they're not going to know how we do things. They're not trained for years in what we do, you know? So it's always different.
How were Carol, you had when you were younger, Nick a little bit older. I know you get these questions all the time, but you're so good at telling stories about all these guys that you've worked with in the past. How much would Saban change it year to year? Or did he have to anymore?
You know, I've always said those are two Hall of Fame coaches, and it just shows you can win different ways. There's not one way to win. I mean, they're polar opposites on almost everything and how they do things. You know, Saban's very military, very much like nothing changes for the most part. Now, to his credit, every once in a while, something like the evolution of the offense, you know, like, you know, saying, hey, this is what's going on out there. I need to change. So he does do that. But for the most part, I mean, every day, you know, whatever day, October 1st of last year is just like October 1st of this year. And just like it was 10 years, the coaches that have been there forever, well, 10 years ago, you can pull it out. It's the same note. Coach Carroll, completely different. Like every day is new. Everything's new. You know, they're just totally different.
What was it like when Saban called you to join the staff?
I was excited. You know, I mean, it was, you're going to learn from the best. And I kind of looked at it as like going back to school. You know, you've been out of school for a long time, not being an assistant coach, and you go back to get a different degree. And so you're going back to the best school there is to get a different degree in coaching.
It feels like a lot of people try to take from him, but every time I'll hear stories about it, it's like, nah, like they're just, it feels like it's the most dialed in thing. Can you take that? Or is that a personality thing?
Take a system, basically, mean?
Yeah.
You can take some, but you got to have, like, he is so trained, like, years of training. And, like, you know, it takes a really unique guy. I think Kirby's wired very similar. So that's why there's a lot of similarities there in what he took and how he does it. But not many people are like that.
the way you answer that, you're like almost thankful in a way.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's just not many. I'm saying it as a good thing to them. Not many people are that disciplined, you know, to be able to do the same thing every day like that.
Oh, what makes Pete different then? Not what makes them similar. What made Pete different?
It's just a totally different atmosphere. Everything's different. And, you know, I've said it. It's public before. I've said I struggled in a initial transition there because I was coming from such, you know, kind of like coming from one parent to the other as assistant coach, they're in charge of you, you know? So, Coach Carroll's just, I mean, he's just, they're both one of a kind in completely opposite ways.
Because you were obviously, you know, a lot younger when you're going into it, and you had given up what, your final year of playing at Fresno, because you were just like, hey, what went into that decision? Obviously, you know, we all know that your dad's history and everything, but when you're like, okay, this is pointless, I got to get into coaching as soon as I can. What was that like?
I think it was just, you know, the ability to see down the road and just know, okay, this is what I was going to do. And, you know, instead of being third string quarterback, I was second. And then David Carr came in and I watched him throw a few times. I go, okay, well, I'm going to be third really quick. So it was just, okay, I can, and it really was like, I would sit in the office with Coach Tedford, like my coach all the time. And then I'd have to leave when they'd have meetings, like staff meetings, offensive meetings, I'd have to leave. And I just wanted to learn more. So it was kind of like, well, that's the only way I can stay in there. So I just started coaching.
Do you think you could do anything else?
My daughter's in here laughing right now at the answer. I don't know that.
I should reframe that question, Lane, because that's the way I said it. It was like as if you're incapable of doing anything other than being a really good coach. So I should ask, like, what would you have done? I shouldn't have asked it that way. That was insulting.
No. That was fine. I don't know. I've known it for so long. I mean, my mom says when I was little, I used to say I was going to be a veterinarian, you know, because of love for animals. But that's, I just knew all along.
Are you the most settled you've ever been then now? Because, you know, it all happened so fast, man. It was all happening so fast. And then you probably feel like, hey, the USC thing's going to go great. It doesn't. You have to take a step back. And now you land at, like, you know, look, you're at Ole Miss in the SEC West. And I know everybody is a competitive business and all that, but I just wonder, you know, at 47, if you're just a little bit more settled than you've ever been before.
Yeah. I mean, all those things. We had a coach the other day when I was talking about something, and it's like every day something new, you know, new challenge. Because when you're a head coach, you got so many employees and players. And he said, you know, you can't have a testimony without a test. I was like, that's a really good saying. And that's what I think about all those things that happen that you thought were going to go this way and thought it was dream job USC and you'd be there forever and, you know, live in Manhattan Beach and, you know, and all of a sudden you're in Tuscaloosa and then you're in Boca and then you're in Oxford, Mississippi, and now you love it here. So you just never know why things happen. And, you know, and that they do when you go through things difficult, they do make you better. It's just hard to see when you're in them.
I know you got Auburn this week. I know it's a busy week, so thanks for taking the time out for us, and good luck, all right? This episode is supported by State Farm. So look, a little rock hit your dude's windshield on the highway. And at first you're like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's just a little mark. Nope. Now by the end of the ride, it's a big crack. And it'd been a while. So I check out the State Farm app. I go, hey, this is what happened. And the funny thing is I was like, do I want to go app first or do I call? Old school guy, probably should call. It's like, let's check out the app. Not only did it take a minute to get done, they set up the glass replacement. They told me the estimate ahead of time, said, do you want to go ahead with it? And I was like, now I understand. It's all in front of me, all done. I don't even have to talk to anybody. That's how efficient the insurance game has become. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, just like I did, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to somebody. The app was so good, I didn't even need to do that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. This episode is brought to you by Hulu Plus Live TV. Looking for a better way to watch live TV? Stream your favorite sports and shows on over 95 live channels with Hulu Plus Live TV. Get access to Hulu's entire streaming library, Disney Plus and ESPN Plus, all in one plan. Start your free trial of Hulu Plus Live TV today. Live TV plan required. Restrictions apply. Access content from each service separately. Learn more at Hulu.com. We're going to give out our picks, our season-long FanDuel contest between Kyle Cerruti and myself. We all have different theories on this. I think Cerruti's in first. Should be 5-0.
I mean, yeah, I should be undefeated. I'm not. I lost again last week. I'm 3-2. But, I mean, listen, I had the Dolphins, and, you know, Teddy Bridgewater goes off on the first series. We got a seventh-string rookie quarterback in there for basically the entire game at the Jets. It's a loss, but, like, you know, I'm not.
No one cares.
I'm not that mad about it.
Sorry. I won my fantasy league, by the way, auto-drafted baseball fantasy league. Top four picks were Trout, Harper, Franco, Stanton. So you're thinking, how the hell did you win, Russillo, with those four guys, all the injuries that you had to deal with? Wander was out way too long, came back from that hammock bone thing, no power. Trout in and out, fucking Stanton gone. Harper missed a huge chunk. Fucking guy still wins. Guy still wins his league.
Was it like a 16 league?
No.
10 teamer.
Ah, doubtful.
No, we're doing it. We're doing a 2-hour recap. It's a special. We're going to release it on Thursday.
Three-parter.
Breaking down Russillo's auto draft.
We'll be like, July 1st, do I pick up George Kirby? And the answer to that is yes. And if he was on your waiver wire, what's wrong with your fucking... But I did. I think I dropped him late to just because I needed to just pick up K's, you know. And you're going, all right, how much WHIP and ERA can I sacrifice here by throwing more innings? Do I have the right arms? Because I need to pick up K's. And then I'm like all over the stolen base thing. I mean, I drafted Julio Rodriguez. I picked him up after the auto draft. They didn't even do it for me. I picked him up because I'm always locked in on some of the new hot prospects. Alek Manoah. Cease. Those guys are my anchors of the staff. I didn't have a lot of closers. I had the Guardians guy, but then at the same time, like I just had to piecemeal it together. I mean, just a constant fucking battle of checking the closer depth charts, who's hot, who's not. And I'm just mixing and matching. And I did a great job last year with my middle infielders.
Oh my God.
So yeah, you'll get more of this.
This is Cerruti's fault for saying he should be 5-0, isn't it? This is what you get. Fucking roots.
It is. Yeah, there'll be a 2-hour, three-part.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, should be great. Can't wait.
I don't think Spotify is going to publish it. They want to do it under a different arm. Okay, all right, Cerruti, the board is yours.
Back to the well, man. I'm going to go with a home favorite. I'm going to tease it down. So give me the Packers. They're playing the Jets. I don't think the Packers are awesome, but I don't think the Jets are good, even though they're 3-2. So I'll take... the Packers minus 2.5. We're going to tease that down. We'll take over 34.5 and under 60.5. So you get a little sweet spot there. That's about even money as well. So again, I said, how could it lose? I've lost two of three weeks. So I guess who knows at this point?
Two of 5 weeks.
Well, two of the last three. Yeah, I'm not on a good run right now.
No, none of us are. We were red hot out of the gates. And the crazy thing about this is every now and then you're not red hot the whole time. All right, Kyle, go ahead.
All right, I got another fathead bedroom poster parlay coming on. I don't know, Mac Jones or Bailey Zappi. Turns out it doesn't fucking matter versus our old friend Jacoby Brissett. And it's, I'd like New England to win this game. So it's plus 126, and I'm going to take the over. The Browns have scored, the over is 42.5. The Browns have scored pretty much 20 points in every game. And so the Pats have too, except for the first 2 weeks. So I think we're in a groove. I think we're going to hit 42, 43 points easy. And I'd like the Patriots to win this game. So that's plus 293.
Damn.
Okay, here we go. Public money. Public bets. Okay, so the one that jumps out immediately, I don't know if I want to bet against Cincinnati again. Although I think this is like the third time I would have to have done it. I'd have to take the Saints plus 2 at home against Cincinnati. Only 13% of the bets are on New Orleans. That is a very low number. You know, every now and then it'll touch a 10-90 split on that. The other game that I liked a little bit was Carolina getting 10.5 at LA. That's actually a pretty public bet because everybody's thinking the same exact thing. Not the NHL coach was just fired. People rally around the new guy. It's just that why are the Rams favored by 10.5 points against any NFL team right now when their offense is this much of a problem? But that's what everybody else is seeing too. So when I saw the lines and hadn't checked the public bets yet, I was like, okay, that might be worth it. But people are on it. So let's go back to the well. Let's take the Saints +2 along with 13% of the other people that are putting bets on New Orleans.
Let's go.
You want details? Fine. I drive a Ferrari, 355 Cabriolet. What's up? I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
Life advice, lifeadvicerr@gmail.com. Okay, doctor making 400K plus a year. Can't get date. 37.57. 140 pounds. Bench is 225. Squats 225. All right. Great shape. He says, great. Only do it to stay in shape. Asian. So when I go out, I can easily pass my mid-20s or early 30s.
Okay.
Jacked Asian guy.
Doctor.
Doctor. 400 plus K. All right. In my 20s. Yeah, yeah, looks younger. In my 20s, never really had confidence issues or trouble getting girls, even though I'm considered short. I've dated girls much taller than me. No Brad Pitt, but don't look like Danny DeVito either. By the way, love Danny DeVito. In a blink of an eye, I'm 37. And now I've become that old dude at bars that are annoyed of the younger, more energetic crowd. At least no one knows that you're old. I don't have the energy or charisma to meet girls at the bar anymore. In my younger days, I was the funny, energetic guy that shot outside of his league, got rejected a lot, but also got a lot of girls too. All part of the game. Guy sounds like
congrats.
Omar over here. However, I just feel super creepy when pursuing a girl in her 20s and getting rejected. I have no problem dating a girl in her 20s, but just feel old and creepy when actively pursuing them at bars. However, since I'm not going out as much anymore, I've tried online dating and it's extremely brutal.
Yeah.
I don't think I've yet matched with one girl I would approach in real life. This is not an exaggerated statement. There has been actual stats saying that Asian men get the least amount of matches on dating apps.
I think I saw that in college.
Yeah.
Took some class in college where they said that.
I've never researched it. I'm also not an Asian guy in a dating app, so I'll take him at his word here. I hate social media and posting up self-indulgent photos that just make me cringe. But at this point, I can't even get dates. My confidence is shot and it's slowly bleeding into real life. So do I now start posting photos of myself showing that I'm a doctor? Do I post
yes.
shirtless photos?
Yes.
Do I post a photo of me in a nice car? Yeah, what the fuck's wrong with that? No.
How about a lab coat with nothing on under?
How about a boat?
Have you? Oh, you stole my joke. Damn it.
Surdy, drop the joke.
No. You did it. That's what I was going to say. Have you heard about a boat? But it's all right.
Yeah. Look, hey, as we know, the boat doesn't always work. Or am I not getting matches purely because I'm 5'7"? Laughing, crying emoji. Also, my ego will be hurt even more if I do post those self-indulgent photos and get no matches. Struggle with that word twice today. Should I just say, fuck it, be a sugar daddy? Let's start with the last part first. The sugar daddy thing, I hear about this stuff. I don't know what's real or not. It sounds so fucking weird to me because I'll hear it maybe from like, actually, I probably heard it from the female perspective far more than I've heard it from the male perspective. Because you're always kind of like, what's that guy doing? And what's she doing? And like, what's going on there? And whatever. And like sometimes it's like, oh, they just really connected, or no, that guy's a movie producer, or it's like now there's sort of an arrangement. And then when you're the guy and you're paying for fucking shoes and trips and, you know, again, cool, you're having sex with somebody that's attractive, that's younger, and there's no attachment there whatsoever. There's nothing about each other's personalities like that was enough for it to ever happen in the first place, or you were wired that way with this detachment, which maybe some people would prefer. Or she is wired with attachment because she's just getting something out of it. That usually means she's sleeping with other people and like the whole thing. And it's kind of fucking weird. And I don't know. I mean, that's a whole nother level of disappointment. And it sounds like that's not really what you want to do. I get where you're coming from, though. Look, you're a doctor. You're successful. you're smart, you probably think about things too much, or your brain works in a certain way that's made you successful at something that's really hard and complicated and that you had to be intelligent. So you're applying a lot of those same things to when you're out in the scene. And I'm telling you firsthand, as you get a little bit older and you're just out and about, you're just like, I don't really fucking care about this anymore. But then you're like, wait, how long am I going to continue to not care about putting yourself out there? You're still 37. You're still young. You're really successful. You're strong. Okay. You got to get out of your own fucking head. And I don't know how to unlock it. All right. Only you can. But you have to start going out in a way, because this is still clearly important to you, where you have to stop thinking about every single angle or, oh, I feel old, or, oh, life, I feel creepy. Because honestly, 37 is, I mean, granted, it depends on where you're going. Like, I went to a bar for alumni weekend with my buddy who's older than me because his daughter wanted him to meet up. And we were like there for one round. And I was like, dude, this is fucking weird. Okay. It wasn't, I mean, forget hitting on anybody. You were just like, get me the fuck out of here. So I don't know if that's where you're living or where you're going, but maybe you need to change up the venue, you know, a few more road games for you, you know, stop, you know, don't be one of these Southern schools that plays 8 home games. So that would be the first thing that you have to figure out. Like, you can do all the Instagram shit. You're probably not going to get that many bites from that. Cool. You have a nice car and there's 4 abs hanging out. Like, I don't really know if that's going to happen. You could just volume shoot like fucking crazy when you put the Instagram profile together if you want to, but I don't know. I don't know if you really want to do that. I don't know that that's the best plan, but you need to unfuck yourself upstairs and stop overthinking everything about, like, oh, now I feel this way, or I feel this way, I feel this way. You ever see the kind of guy that, like, is a little dumber that you see out all the time, and he's got fucking sleeve tats, and he's wearing some aggressive shit, maybe still some diesel jeans? That guy doesn't think about any of that shit. He doesn't think about it. He's not overthinking about it. And he might be a little bit dumber than you, but guess what? He doesn't have all these hangups around 115 buying rounds for grade. Like, he doesn't give a fuck anymore. And all of us that are caught up in this, granted, like my age, most people are like, I'm trying to figure out if I have enough money for fucking college for kids. But everybody there's this certain line of, like, a certain level of intelligence. Once you get past it, you just start thinking about all the shit that doesn't even matter. And you've already fucked yourself. Like, my dad said to me that time when I lost, I was awful in some junior high basketball game. And he goes, you lost this game on the ride over. You're losing the game before you even pay a cover charge or show your ID, which you clearly have to here.
Nice. I think maybe the answer could be, you're at the wrong bars, dude. I think that might be.
Yeah.
I think, like, know where you can go to meet folks in the other age bracket, like
Radisson
hotel bars. I was going to say,
yeah,
I know exactly where to go in Poughkeepsie. If somebody was like, I need to meet women 35 to 50. I'd be like, great. I know exactly where to send you.
I don't think Sky wants to meet anyone who's
got 50. A spot.
Well, I'm just saying, that's probably the bracket. That's what you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not the bingo.
It's a good spot
for the
Panthers
bingo hall, watering hole, but it's before that, you know. It's like, it's people that aren't going to, people that don't want to be around 20-year-olds either. So I think there's plenty of places like that. Yeah, I don't know. I think you'd probably cringe at yourself with the fact that you are hesitating on doing this whole Instagram revamp thing. I think means that you would probably look at it afterwards and be like, what the fuck did I just do? And then you probably got colleagues on there. You got other doctors be like, what the fuck is Johnny doing over there? He just, like,
yeah,
totally.
let me jump in. Like, the guy that gets dumped on for doing that while he's having sex, like, who's actually winning? The guy's talking shit about him?
Oh, maybe they're not talking shit about him. I'm just saying the guy's already in his own head enough where he's like, is this going to be like, it's like more the professional colleagues I'm thinking about. Because, like, I mean, how are you going to even, how is that even going to add anything to you? Like, the only way that other people, like, the people that already know you on Instagram, you just want them to look at you differently? Or is it going to, or is it just purely for Tinder?
I don't even know. Right. I don't even know that it's realistic that you're going to grow enough of a following unless you come up with some sort of angle.
Yeah.
Hey, look, you could join yoga, right? You start going to some yoga classes, go to different places, scope it out. Again, this sounds really old. I've thought about it. You get that weekly newsletter or the monthly on, like, different activities through town. Maybe you find something that makes sense. Now, I've thought about it. I haven't gone to one of those fucking things in 4+ years. Who are we kidding? But I'm just saying, You need to use whatever skills that you have. Clearly, you have them. You're smart enough to become a doctor. You're successful in all those things. There's an intensity that you have, a single-mindedness. You need to take from that pile a little bit and apply it over these other things and put like real, your own resources into fixing the fact that you clearly are alone. Like you're lonely. It's bothering you. You're emailing into the fucking podcast. You need to take some of those skills that you actually have. Like think all the people that ask for stuff, they may not have the skills. They may not think the right way. Like you could do this, but you haven't. So, you know, that's nothing. We can't change that.
Two-part solution here. One, have you thought about getting a dog? Because you get a dog, one, loneliness, boom, out the window. And then get the dog and just go to a park and just hang out. Like it's like a magnet for girls that are going to want to come up and talk to you.
I like
typically
it.
Younger girls as well. So I'm very pro getting a dog, and it also kind of reminds me of, you know, remember in Superbad, the quote from Bill Hader when he's talking to McLovin, he's like, you don't want to meet a girl at a bar, dude. Like you want to meet a girl, you know, at a spin class or like a farmer's market, like somewhere that's non-threatening, like a pumpkin patch, given the time of year. Do stuff like that. Like put yourself out
pumpkin
there.
Patch.
You don't have to go
solo
to a bar. If you got a dog at a pumpkin patch, like that is you are going to be a magnet to like attractive girls who. And you're not gonna have to do a ton of talking because the dog is there, and like your confidence gets back up. There's gonna be a bunch of people coming up to you. Like I just feel like the dog situation and go to like cool events and places that aren't bars. It's gonna be very helpful to you.
Maybe you could start going places in scrubs, but that will definitely distinguish you as a doctor and not
go to
a
Whole
nurse.
Foods.
Yeah,
go to Whole Foods in scrubs. It's a good call. Yep. Yep.
Just a way to be like, I'm
yeah, right.
Call.
He's actually a doctor too.
Yeah.
Right. This is. I don't know about, look, pumpkin patch with a dog, maybe. Pumpkin patch solo, cop's probably going to call.
Well, all right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, the dog is pretty crucial there. Yeah. Like, we got to get a dog first.
Okay, next one. Dating app height issue. All right, here we go. A lot of height on the pod today. 6'2". All right, so it's not a...
Okay.
Yeah. Well played, Kyle. Well played. 6'2", 195. Bench 190. Squat 205. Okay. All right, coming back. Oh, bulging disc in the back, nerve pain. Could barely tie my shoes for an entire year. So the numbers are way down. Always been a pretty athletic guy. Shout out. Big fan. Okay, cool. So here we go. Saruti's the man. Kyle reminds me of the one friend I had who was street smart and always had something entertaining to say. Just like the last couple pods this week. Kyle's been on fire. Okay, here we go. The email. I'm on Bumble. I matched with a girl who was fairly attractive, also looking for something casual. It was perfect. This is the same guy from the South. She starts off by asking me for my worst first date story. I say, quote, honestly, everyone I've met has been pretty nice and I don't think I have any. What about you? Her response, which I'll write down verbatim, is, quote, you're lucky then. Thought he was just short online. Show up to the bar and he's at a high top table. Doesn't get up to greet me, which is a bit odd, but fine. Halfway through drinks, I notice his arms are abnormally short. He excuses himself to go to the bathroom and boom, hopped off the bar stool. Totally normal looking person, but maybe 4'10". I left while he was in the bathroom. Couldn't do it.
That's fucked.
That was her text.
Yeah, that's fucked. She's mean.
So the emailer continues here. Sorry, hold on. Do you want to jump in?
No, so Rudy, I mean, like, or is it? You know, if... I'm gonna sound like a dick. Like, was the guy clear about his height situation when they met up? No. If that's the case, like, it was a non-starter for her. So, I don't know. I don't think it's a deal breaker. It's not a good start, though.
A couple of my friends did this to a Celtic. They were like, "This is a Celtic. This is gonna be awesome. We're gonna get drunk with a Celtic." And then after like 30 minutes, this guy's like, "This guy's such a fucking dork."
Yeah.
And they left.
I don't like that. I don't like the ghosting. I'd rather make it up an excuse. I just don't like it coming back. Like coming back from somewhere with two drinks or a bathroom. It's like, oh, fuck, I guess you're just gone. That's just sad. That makes me really sad.
It is.
So really thinks, though, if this false advertisement, it's still... Okay, all right, let's keep going here. The emailer writes, I was fucking horrified that she had done that to another human being.
Yep.
This guy might be from Chicago. Every first date he's ever had, everybody was really nice. And he was this upset about this happening. First, she doesn't have to be into him, but she could have. At the very least, just made up some stupid excuse like, quote, hey, I forgot to water my plants. I actually think saying that would have been worse than just leaving.
Yeah,
but I get his point. Right.
But like, okay, what's the end game? You're going to string it along a couple weeks just because you feel bad?
No,
like, no.
It's ending
like,
today.
It's over.
It's ending today, but you still can't just be like, you can't just run away. That's so fucked up.
All right, but that would have been, and I think it's not about the watering the plants, any kind of excuse, like, hey, I'm out of here. That would have been, as the emailer says, 100 times better than what she did. Here's my dilemma. I could have just gone along with the ridiculously heartless story of her just ghosting someone in the middle of the date because he was sure, all because I just wanted to hook up with her. But here's what I responded with. Quote, I'm not judging what kind of person you are. I think we all end up doing shitty things to people at some point in our lives, but what you did to that guy was incredibly heartless.
Nice, dude. You're
a real fucking hero.
Nice, man.
Yeah. She quickly unmatched me without another word. Should I have just gone along with her incredibly shitty story just for the sake of hooking up or some kind of response not condoning that type of behavior warranted? What would you guys have done? It depends entirely on how hot she is. Who are we kidding?
Yeah. If we're already in the in the dating app mode and we're in the swipe mode instead of the read the bio mode, I think,
it's super shitty.
The amount of times that question is the answer every time to some of these life advice examples is
because it's true. Because it's totally true. Like, yes, there are some of you that like the standards. That's incredible. I think most guys' standards get blown out of the water on a certain scale where you're like, well, I think it's great what you did. I think it's cool. You know, I don't know if there's going to be a lesson learned and now she'll think about it differently. I mean, if you think about that guy that's sitting at the table, you come out of the bathroom and she's fucking gone.
Jesus.
It's a pretty shitty feeling, you know? I don't know. I'm trying to think. Did I ever have anything like that happen? No.
No. Because it's so horrible. It doesn't happen that often, but it's
happens enough. I left a formal once. Like, I was the date, and I was like, I'm out of here. I took a guy's car and drove back up to campus. I just left.
Here's
that
the thing.
That kind of sucks, too.
And
I had a reason. She was dancing with like a million other, and it was just like,
it was going on.
Yeah. And I was like, all right, we're out of
here. You were pushed to it. I got this.
Yeah.
I don't want people to think that I'm like some heartless tool, but, you know, because I don't think I would have done that. It depends on the details, though. Like, did the guy say he was like 5'7 in his profile? Like, did he lie? If he lied, I think there's like more of I think there's more of a lease there to be like, oh, well, screw this, I'm out. You know, if she didn't know that was completely blind going in, it's 100% a dick move. I wouldn't have done that. I don't know. I'm willing to give it a pass. I don't think you're like the worst person in the world just because you do that, I guess is what I would say.
But to volunteer that information maybe makes you even worse than the person who you found out
like,
in.
Sometimes when people are trying to break the ice, like they kind of share too much or they're kind of weird. And you're like, it's impossible to get a full picture of what somebody really is and how good or bad of a person they are. You know, when you're just messaging on Bumble. So maybe she was just like a little bit nervous or whatever and said this story that she shouldn't have shared. Like, it doesn't matter because like, you know, obviously you're going your separate ways and nobody's really hurting this. But I don't think you played it wrong. But I also don't, you know, I don't know. I'm not fully blaming her here. I'd like to know more details.
Really even know what the question is. Like, should you have not said anything? So you already made the decision. You already decided what was important to you and you didn't want to keep talking to, or you wanted to let somebody know that they did something really shitty and it's a person who did something really shitty. You were clearly pretty nice. Three clues. You said that every first date you've been on, everybody's been really nice. You were upset about this enough to tell her directly, even though you barely knew her and hadn't hooked up with her yet. And you brought up an excuse of, hey, forgot to water my plants, which tells me that you water your plants regularly. So there's three clues that you're probably nicer, you know, whatever the average line of nice is, you're a little bit above that. So cool. You win. Good for you. I don't know that, you know, again, depending on how attractive guys were to whatever the match was, it would have depended on how far they were willing to go with saying this. What she did was really shitty. And the thing is she is capable of doing something like that, right? She's capable of doing something like that. And, you know, I don't know what age we're talking about here, because if you're getting closer to 30, then it's a real problem. She wasn't going to go, hey, great point.
Yeah.
Let's get lunch this week.
Yeah.
You know?
I think you knew that was a sunk cost when you did it. You know? I think you knew that.
You're on Bumble.
I got to be honest. If I was at a bar, probably I would have been like, I would have had like unstoppable reaction. I'm probably like, Jesus fucking Christ, you said that? But because you had the time to type it out, I can't say I would do the same thing. I love that you did it. If it was in person, I think I would have been like, what the fuck are you talking about? Because I just have to talk to you right away. But if I had time to think about a type, but I probably wouldn't have done what you did. I love what you did. And I love that you kind of stuck it to some, you know, usually women on these apps, I think, have way more power. So the fact that you kind of ended this, you were like, without unmatching, you were kind of just be like, this isn't going anywhere. Take it for the dudes. Coming back full circle.
Take it for
the
dudes.
You did a great job.
No, I mean, again, like, you know, it's like you don't go to Olive Garden looking for like the best Italian meal you've ever had. Like, you don't go to you don't go on Bumble looking for like the perfect girl.
Dude,
like,
with the metaphors, there's probably
gonna
today.
Be there's probably gonna be like red flags everywhere on Bumble for someone who is just looking to hook up. So I don't know, man. Like, I guess congrats. Like, thank you. I mean, as the shortest person on this podcast, like, I'm not even I'm the least mad about it, which is so funny. I don't know. Anyway.
4'10" is a whole new
5'10", by the way. I'm 5'10", so I'm not
4'10". 4'10's a different neighborhood.
But 4'10", yeah, she probably was even making that up too. She was probably making that up to make the story sound so much cooler.
Definitely.
He was probably 5'5".
Definitely.
No, great call. This guy actually sounds cool. She should have stayed there. Okay. That's life advice. Thanks to Cerruti. Thanks to Kyle. Please subscribe. Ryan Russillo Podcast, Ringer, Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.